This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
Hello, Hearts of Oak, and welcome to another news review coming to you just a day before you watch this Saturday evening. And it's wonderful to have Charlie Sanson back, who was last with us at the very end of last year. Charlie, thanks so much for joining us once again.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year, I guess, and it's just the first time.
It is. Happy New Year. We did Happy Christmas last time, so it's Happy New Year this time.
Yeah.
Great to have you on. And, of course, if the viewers are not sure where to find Charlie, there he is. That is his Twitter page. And also, Charlie, you're doing I think it's Sunday evenings you're doing. Do you want to just mention that and what people can find on that on Twitter Spaces?
Yes, I host something called X Uncensored because I figured that I'd play on the fact that Elon allows free speech now. For the most part, I've seen a few people complain about that, but for the most part, and I just fancied having broader conversations with people that may or may not agree with me. And I figured Twitter is one of those places where you can have that. So every week I have myself and a co-host and we chew the fat a little bit and then we invite people on to have a good debate. But 9 times out of 10, it ends up in an argument, which is also not a bad thing.
Yeah, that can make it more interesting on these topics.
Just the conflict of viewpoints is great.
Oh, it is. 100%. 100%. So let's go into our first story. And this is GB News. And of course, this has been happening for a while, but I know you've just put this piece up. And it is interesting to discuss it. We'll get on to Talk TV, what's happened. And of course, Dan winning more cases today against the mayor and, of course, starting his own thing. So there's a lot packed into this. And you titled this The Cull of the Courageous, How GB News Turned on Its Own. The Home of Free Speech, inverted commas, turns its back on Lawrence Fox, Dan Wooten and Calvin Robinson. But to what end? Let us know kind of why you wrote the article and then we'll touch on one of the 2 points around it.
Well, I wrote this article back in October. And I've republished it again purely because Twitter allows you to write articles now in a proper structured format. And the Ofcom ruling came in that, you know, the show was outrageously misogynistic or worse to that effect, which of course it wasn't. But, you know, Ofcom got to do the Ofcom thing.
And Ofcom, for US viewers, that's the regulatory body here for communications. The government actually controls the media here, which is quite weird for probably most countries.
Yeah, it's kind of strange that the government do control the media, but then we're told we have a free press, which of course we don't. But the reason why I wrote the article was because I saw the principles of GB News going right down the toilet. You cannot be a free speech platform, or at least brand yourself that way, if you're going to sack people at the first sign of a problem. Now, look, I know that Lawrence, they already had it in mind to get rid of Lawrence well before this moment. I know that from sources internal, but the way they managed to squeeze Dan out and then obviously Calvin, he left of his own accord. But I still think at the end of the day that if you are going to be a free speech platform and someone says something a little bit risky or a little bit, oh, okay, that was a bit left of center, fine. It's a moment in time. People will talk about it for a week. It's great for the channel. Keep it going. Don't respond to it. Move on. GB News gave oxygen to their own demise, which I can't really understand.
And of course, as Lauren said, whenever he was with us at the event last week, he said, look, I did say something and I'll take responsibility for that. But then for Dan and Calvin to be taken down, it did seem as though GB News were looking for a reason to remove them. And of course, Dan wouldn't have been on the channel since day one, hadn't he?
Well, Dan was always their biggest advocate. So I do feel sorry for Dan. You know, he's put in a position where the producers knew what was going to be said. This is the thing that a lot of people don't know, is that a lot of what you hear on television is preordained. A lot of the time, the producers know what's going to be said. And with the Lawrence thing and who'd want to shag that remark, that was okayed by producers. So for him then to get thrown under the bus, seems like a setup. Dan being caught in that just because he's in the room, so to speak. I know it was a virtual interview like we're doing, but he was kind of in the room, therefore he can be used as collateral damage. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And, you know, since then, I think that many people have tuned off of GB News because of that whole furore surrounding that remark. But it's a shame. And I do feel sorry for all of them, actually. But what can you do?
It's true. And maybe we'll touch on what they are now doing, because the three of them are not just sitting on their laurels on their backside waiting to be picked up. That you've got Father and Fox, or Fox and Father. I don't know which way around it is. And I've seen clips of it. Haven't watched the full thing with Calvin and Lawrence. Of course, Dan also is starting something. So I think from kind of what GB News have tried to do to remove individuals, actually, I'll just give them oxygen. I mean, I've seen Calvin's profile rise exponentially, really, over the last 6 months or so. And I think this will help Loza and Dan having something new as well. It can only benefit the promotion of truth and free speech.
It can, but I do fear that when the broadcasters fail, which they are all failing, and everything goes online, which is the inevitable direction of travel, that's when we're going to see Ofcom broaden itself into the online space, and then we'll see how far free speech actually goes on the internet. I don't know how far that will go. That's my biggest concern, is that the government will say, hang on a second, BBC's flopping, Sky's flopping, GB News is about to fold, Talk TV is pretty much given up already. We need to control them elsewhere, and that's what they're going to do. That's what I predict.
And of course, what's happened with Neil Oliver in the last few days, really, of his show, I think fully been moved online. And I guess that's GB News saying, actually, we're a business and we don't really have values as such. We're here to make money. And I think when it launched, we bought into the idea, maybe an initial good idea, that this was actually a free speech platform. In effect, it is a business, and the bottom line is what's important. And I think that's why they've hived Neil Oliver over online, to protect themselves from that regulatory body.
Maybe, but maybe they see the writing is on the wall and that's the only way they can go now. But the one thing I would say is that how are you going to get people like Nigel Farage, Eamon Holmes, you know, two guys that are synonymous now with broadcasting? For what, I know that people respect Nigel for his politics, but effectively he's now a TV presenter. How are they going to feel going from the glitz and glamour of being on television to being a YouTube star? That's the one thing that I think that they're not quite ready for. And secondarily to that, if you take the ego out of it, the financial side of it is this. Talk TV, not to jump all over the place, but they're obviously going to a completely online situation right now.
Well, there's this story. So yes, talk through this. Going online, Rupert Murdoch's gamble, I guess, has failed because he couldn't beat GB News, and GB News can't beat the others either.
Well, the thing with this is that even if you go onto YouTube at any point of the day and you watch Talk TV's numbers, they're low anyway online. So I don't see how they're going to turn that around with the online space, because the format is effectively we'll have, you know, 6, 7, 8 shows in a day, and we'll all talk about the same subjects with a different host, with different guests, but we'll all be talking the same talking points. For me, that's quite boring. For people who are interested in politics, that would also be boring. I've seen other channels online which get more viewers than they do. I mean, Hearts of Oak gets more viewers than what Talk TV does. But people will know who Talk TV are, but in the mainstream, in the wider sense of the word, but they may not know, who Hearts of Oak are in common parlance, like BBC, GB News, Sky News, etc. But still, you're more successful in terms of numbers than they would be. So if that continues, how are they going to make money? That's the biggest thing for me here. It is about the bottom line, like you said earlier, about the finances. But, you know, you also need to have an audience, and they don't seem to have one.
No, I agree, because we get probably between 100 and 120,000 per show, which is that's obviously going up and up. But then even just looking at Lawrence and Calvin, their first show, and I think Lawrence posted that it was getting 6 or 7 times the live views for the first show they've done than I think, comparing it to Talk TV or something. And you're right, it shows the disconnect that actually online is where the conversation is, although it's not necessarily where the big bucks are. And you're right, it'll be difficult for those presenters to walk away from large pay packets and embrace actually the online ecosphere, which really is where information is disseminated.
It's not even that these big TV stars couldn't make money online, but if you're going to do it under an umbrella of a TV company, you've also got to factor in that that advert money from YouTube or whoever else you're going to make your money has to be split up amongst producers, cameramen, lighting, you know, script writers, the hosts themselves. That isn't going to go very far. But if you are a big name like Nigel Farage, if he was to do his own show on his own website, on his own account, he would make more money than he would if he was functioning off of a GB News, you're an employee type of situation. And everybody knows that. So do I think the mainstream are going to survive? No, I don't. And good.
I agree. And the numbers in that Guardian article talking about GB News, that it's just lost 42 million after losing 32 or 33 million the year before. And of course, that's all paid. So it now owes the parent company, because money does not grow on trees. So it now owns the parent company 80 million plus. And at some point, they have to pull the plug on it, because no one is willing to lose 40 million a year, no one in their right mind. So yeah, you're right. The writing does seem to be on the wall. Talk TV shut down. The writing seems to be on the wall for GB News and the experiment of operating under Ofcom rules as a free speech platform seems to be completely gone.
They're too late in the day, Peter. If they'd have started these platforms 5 years earlier, maybe even 10 years earlier, they may have a viable chance of survival, and there may be a way forward for them, but they've started within the last 2 or 3 years in an era where people want to go on YouTube for everything. They want to go on Google for everything. The, you know, what the internet has done to news is the same thing as what Netflix has done to the cinema. No one's going to go and pay 20, 30, 40 quid to go and watch a film with their girlfriend or boyfriend or their kids or whatever the case may be, when they can spend $10.99 a month to get unlimited access to any film they want. And everyone's got a fancy TV these days. So why would you go and spend, like I just said, 40, 50, 60 quid on a day out to the cinema? That's without snacks, by the way, when you can just stay indoors for £10 a month. Like, what are you going to do? Seriously, it's the same logic. But people who are old school, who think in that old mentality of the news broadcasters, they're not getting it. They're not getting it.
No, I agree. And usually when I'm driving, I will listen to either podcasts or ebooks or audiobooks, or actually I'll stick GB News on and listen to it. And the thing that pissed me off is most of GB News seems to be advertising themselves. So they spend 5 minutes, never like 20-minute slot, telling you how they're the home of free speech. And literally, if I have to listen to another one of those adverts, it's like, this is too much. Please just tell me the news. And every slot is, well, you've got a new group of presenters for the next 3 hours, and we are the home of free speech, and we'll bring in the news that no one else brings you. But what happened the last 3 hours, the 3 hours before? And you're right, to do 24-hour news is extremely difficult, and in the end, I don't think the viewer interest is there.
No, I don't think it is either. I don't think it is. Like I said, the debates are the same, the topic conversations are the same, because they want to fit into a box, and that box is going to be anti-immigration. It's going to be talking about the trans agenda. It's going to be talking about why the Conservatives are so bad when really they should be so good. And rinse and repeat. I mean, if you want an example of how these people don't know how to spend money, or maybe they do know how to spend money and that's the problem, is how you can give Lee Anderson $100,000 a year to host a show in a pub where he puts his guest in the corner behind him and doesn't really offer. I don't get it. Like, why is that worth $100,000? I mean, I'd do that if you want. I'll sit in a pub all day if you want for $100,000, fine.
I think it's just that we're jealous. But anyway, we'll move on.
It might be that, yeah.
If I paid you $100,000, would you not sit in a pub and talk?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the management at GB News must be thinking, we're shit. We're just shite. Because this isn't a show. This is crap.
Yeah. No, 100%. Let's go on to the Rishi Sunak, our little prime minister. And he made a speech the other week. And this is a great article by Connor Thompson, who's with us a couple of weeks ago, in the Critic magazine, who I don't really have much love for because they did a hit piece on us. But anyway, we'll move away from that.
Really?
They did. The massive hit piece, how awful we were, part of the far right. And of course, they're writing this piece, which is interesting. But anyway, on to this. Sunak, false equivalence and the phantom far right. There's no comparison between the threat of Islamism and the threat of the far right. Last Friday, Rishi Sunak recited that diversity is our strength platitude on the steps of 10 Downing Street, unremarkable if not for his drawing a false equivalency between Islamic extremists who call for Infada every weekend, every day, and Wednesday in Westminster, and the phantom far right. The Prime Minister was unclear, and Connor goes in this, which is a really good article. What are your, because it seems as though our establishment are desperate to find a bogeyman, to find an enemy, and in those who are patriotic, love their country, they seem to have found their target. And as Connor points out in this, actually, the rise of Islamic extremism, that should be what concerns us and not what concerns our security forces. And yet the government says it's all those people who complain about unlimited immigration. They are the problem.
Well, of course we are. We have to be the problem, because to call something for what it is a crime in this country nowadays. You cannot say there's a problem with Islamic extremism, because you have it's the BBC approach. You know, if you say that Peter's a terrible man, you must also say that Peter's a lovely man. The same way as you say Charlie's a terrible person, you've got to also say that I'm great, which to me makes no sense. You can accept that not all Muslims are going to be bad people. That's just obvious. You don't need to explain that every time you bring up the subject of extremism. But if you've got, I don't know the numbers specifically, but I know that 90% of the MI5 watch list in this country for terrorism is watching Muslims.
It's Muslim 95%. Sorry. 90%. And Connor says that's equivalent to 1% of Britain's Muslim population, which makes you sit back and think.
It does, because how many Muslims live in the UK? I'm not entirely sure of that number either, but it's not going to be comparable to the white population or, you know, anything else like the majority population. So that to me is quite concerning. And then I actually had a space a few weeks ago where this subject was brought up, and, you know, the people that came on the show who were Muslims themselves, admittedly, couldn't understand where the outrage was coming from, because of course the problem is with far-right extremism. And when I pushed these individuals, I said, well, give me an example then. Don't just say it. Give me an example that exemplifies far-right extremism. And they had no answers. They couldn't give me anything at all. And I said, the thing is, if you asked me the same, I could give you five off the top of my head without even thinking about it. But you can't even give me one example of how the far-right is comparable to Islamic extremism. It's not. People call individuals far right because they know that they're making a point that it's politically incorrect to make. That's all it is. You know, for me to say that I believe we've got an immigration problem and I'm not really that keen on having Islamic areas in the UK or even having a religious influence on politics, and I would say that about any religion, but you know, there is a motive here. They're openly saying, some individuals in the Muslim community, that they want to set up a political movement, and they're doing that. Look around, you've got plenty of Muslim representation in high offices. I don't think I'm far right for saying, let's have a look at this. But of course, in certain circles, I would be called a racist or a far right extremist or anything along those lines. It's completely unfair. Actually takes the weight away from people who are actually racist and far right.
But again, the issue is definition of terms, I think, because if you look at Islamic extremism, it is, and I would say Islam at its base is is fairly extreme and does not fit into our Western freedoms. But putting that aside, the term means that actually part of Islam that is extreme. When you talk about far right, again, no one seems to be able to define this. Just like Loza has tried to define the term racism, no one can define it. And how can you have a conversation if you can't even define your terms?
It's a Marxist mindset, actually. Where if you throw something at people long enough, it will stick, and that's all that matters, because you can't mention certain individuals without there being that connotation with racism, extremism, Islamic extremism, you know. And the problem with it is that if you can't define it, you can't debate it. And if you can't debate it, then you can't change anything. It's very easy for the Prime Minister, going back to Connor's article, to come out on the steps of Downing Street and say that whilst we acknowledge that there is a problem with Islamic extremism, we've also got a problem with the far right. I don't know who the far right are, and I don't know what they're doing, but we're going to call them that anyway. And all the while I'm acknowledging that we have a problem with extremism from Muslims, we've also got to sack Suella Braverman and we've got to get rid of Lee Anderson because, you know, appearances. But I'm going to come out and make the same speech in a different way, and you guys are going to lap that up and I'm going to expect you guys to vote for me in the next election. It's so transparent, and it's actually insulting that he would come out and do that, given the last few months and the way that even the cenotaph in November, everyone that went to that who wasn't a Muslim was called a far-right extremist. Why? I've seen videos from that day. People stood silently, then they went home again. They didn't do anything, but they were all labelled far-right extremists, despite the fact that the police actually blocked off certain people from getting to that memorial for no reason other than the fact that they probably wanted to change the narrative in the press to make it okay to call white people extremists, which I don't think is okay at all. The same way you're not going to get racists, you can't say that all white people are racist, the same way you can't say that all Muslims are terrorists. Let's be fair, but also acknowledge that you are going to get bad apples in both groups.
Yeah, 100%. Well, let's move on to the Middle East, which is, of course, now the major issue in British politics. let me just leave with a line from or a couple lines from Connor's article on the issue we're discussing, definition. It says, bodies tasked with surveilling the far right can't accurately define it either. I really wish the critic would actually put far right in inverted commas, because no one knows what we're talking about. But anyway, prevent the government's de-radicalization program designated Peter Hitchens, Douglas Murray, Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg, and authors like C.S. Lewis, J.R.R. Tolkien, and George Orwell as pipelines to white nationalism. It seems like it's prevent, not right-wingers who love writing fantasy. So that was just a great line. I'll leave that with viewers. But let's jump into the Middle East, which, of course, following George Galloway, is actually the issue, supposedly, that we all care about. And this is the police, former police officer, saying banning Gaza protests could lead to terror attacks. Suppressing pro-Palestinian protests will increase the risk of a terrorist attack in Britain, a former police officer has warned. Neil Basu, the former head of the UK Counter-Terrorism Policing Network, says preventing people from legitimately voicing their opposition to government policy over the Israel-Gaza conflict could or would fuel more extremism and drive those the fringes to look somewhere else. I'm in two minds on the whole issue, because I think people should have the right to express themselves, but then do you have the right to stop a city, to bring it to a standstill, to bring the police out, and therefore we all pay extra in it? It's more complex, but as you've watched these weekly Gaza pro-Palestinian demonstrations happening, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I'm of the same mindset you have, which is that people should be allowed to make their voices heard. They should have their opinions listened to. But I don't like seeing it. I personally believe that protests are kind of pointless, because you block roads, you actually annoy the common man rather than the important man. So not saying that commoners aren't important, we are, but if you're going to block a road in some shithole town in Shitholesville and the politicians aren't there that day and you've not inconvenienced those people that make the decisions, what have you actually achieved? I don't, that's why I've never understood. I'm going to go Trafalgar Square and I'm going to make a noise. Okay, cool. For what? No one cares. You've just blocked a load of black cabs and police getting somewhere and ambulances getting somewhere. Like Rishi Sunak's at Chequers, he's living up with his wife and, you know, they're sipping champagne while you're getting cold and wet in the rain with your placard. I mean, I'm not being rude to those people because I know they've got good intentions, but at the same time, it's like, come on, if you want to make a noise, you blockade Parliament. You don't blockade a road where people need to get places. But so, yeah, they can do what they want, but at the same time, you know, going back to something you said there from that article that you read out, that if you ban the protests, then there will be a rise in extremism. Why is that?
Yes.
That should be the focus. Why is that? Why do we have to fear extremism? Because you wouldn't get that if you were to block another kind of protest. I mean, I've been to a few protests in my time, and you know, I've never once seen the police pussyfoot around any other group other than people that support Palestine. And I find that alarming that you cannot have that, you know, you cannot actually have a police force that goes out and does their job. However, I understand why they wouldn't, because if you're on 30, 40 grand a year as a bobby, and you've got to take down a group of people that will go for you if they really want to. If you get the wrong group on the wrong day, someone's going to die. And it ain't going to be the extremist. So yeah, factor that in when you want to be pro-Palestine, or when you think that these protests are negligible in the grand scheme of things. They're not really. But I do agree the principle they should be allowed to happen. It's a weird position to be in, because if you believe in free speech, you kind of got to accept it. But at the same time, you also can see the wood for the trees here.
And basically the views been expressed by and large are pro-Hamas, because you're pro-Palestine. The Palestinians are inverted commas, have chosen to have Hamas because if they didn't like them, they get rid of them. That's what happens across countries all across the world. You've uprisings, but also they're absolute hatred of Israel. So I'm not sure how you can have what, extreme support for Hamas and a less extremist support, or less extremist, let's annihilate Israel. Again, I don't know how you can have extreme or non-extreme position on some of those issues, which are fairly hateful positions. Anyone who supports terrorism or wants to annihilate a country, that is extreme by its nature. So may the police just be going in straight away, and with the riot shields, tear gas, water cannons, I know they only use those in Northern Ireland, and just maybe just beat the crap out of people. Maybe that would stop the demonstrations. I don't know.
Well, just given my thoughts. Given your definition of an extremist viewpoint, I suppose that would give credence to those who think that Israel are terrorists and extremists, just by the definition that you've used. I mean, me personally, I don't think that the West should be concerned about what's going on in the Middle East. We've done far too much already to cause disruption in that region of the world. Why are we going to get involved again? Like, we need to learn from our lessons here and just stay out of it. And, you know, you mentioned George Galloway. I quite like George Galloway. I have to admit with you that I do quite like him.
You and Lewis are the same. He was telling me how much he loved, well, didn't love, but he liked George Galloway last Saturday.
Yeah, no, I do, because I think that on the bigger issues, he's on the money. Yeah. He is on the money. Like, I'm not really au fait with this unshakable love for Islam. I don't understand that. I think he needs to be more critical, the same way he would be if it was another faith, the same way that I am with all faiths, as you know. You know, there are, you should be able to pick them apart. But George is one of those guys where he's a fantastic speaker. He knows how to make a good point. People criticized him for his election campaign, saying it was based primarily on the Gaza issue. But when you have open door immigration in this country, which has led to communities being taken over by people of a certain faith, it's actually really good political sense to go in with that tactic and say, I'm going to target the Muslim vote, because he's already got history there, and he's going to win that. If he can repeat that with his other candidates for his Workers' Party for Great Britain, then he might have some success at the general election as well. But I do think that British parliamentarians should focus on Britain. Shocker.
That is a revelation and a fairly extreme position, Charlie.
I know. Definitely. Just cuff me now. Take me away. I'm done.
That's the pure extremism. Now, here is another thing I think we would both agree. Maybe they should be concentrating on this, and that is burglaries, and less on what is happening in the Middle East. Maybe send less money to Ukraine and more money to police forces. But zero burglaries solved in half of all neighborhoods, despite cops at every scene vow. Police failed to solve a single burglary in nearly half of all neighborhoods since 2021, figures reveal. Despite chiefs promising officers would attend all domestic break-ins in 2022, none were solved in 15,000 out of 30,000 neighborhoods, just over 48%. I pretty share my view that I've been at home, we've had a break-in before, you phone the police, they came the next day, they looked around, and even if you have CCTV, they probably just couldn't be bothered doing anything.
Well, I'll tell you a story. A few years ago, my car was broken into because, stupidly, after a gig I was doing one night, I left some of my music equipment in the back of my car, which gave thieves an opportunity, I guess. And when I called the police and said, look, I've had a microphone stolen, I've had some lights nicked, and they smashed my window, they said to me, do you see any fingerprints on the car? And I said, I don't fucking know. I said, I'm not fucking CSI Essex. How the fuck do I know? And they said, well, can you have a look? And I said, what am I looking for? Like, it could be my finger. Like, this is ridiculous. And they said, do your neighbours have CCTV? And I said, no, they don't. And they said, okay, well, then we can't do anything about it. I said, so you're not even going to come and look at the car and, you know, do the... And they said, no, we're not going to come out. Like, there's no chance of us investigating this. We're just going to put it down to an unsolved crime or whatever phrase they used at the time. And I thought, this is what we pay for. This is what we pay for. You get burgled, they don't come. You get stabbed, but did you die, though? That'll be the answer. You know,
you did.
Get on with it, mate. You know, hope you get out of hospital soon, but we are coming to see you. And that's the general. I mean, if I got burgled tomorrow, I wouldn't call the police. What'd be the point? They're not going to come.
Yeah. Well, of course, unless you say, well, your name's Charlie Sanson, but really you do feel like Charlotte, then they may come.
Ah, I mean, that's the key. I might have to call them again about my stolen microphone now.
If you're an LGBT ally, I think they probably could come quite quickly. But that, I mean, seriously, this is the stupid game that we are all encouraged to play, to just make up bullshit, and therefore the police come and they pretend to try and solve your crime.
I mean, look, I can pretend to try and solve my own crime. Obviously, that's what they told me to do. Solve it yourself. If you come up with the evidence, maybe let us know. All right, sweet. I'll do that, shall I?
Oh, it's, yeah, well, that's where the money should go and not being sent abroad. Let's look at another part, which is the what our criminal system is doing, what our courts are doing, and it is this, which has become a really big case, actually. And I hadn't come across Sam Mellor before. And I know Unity News have done a great job in highlighting his case, but they compare, and that's why I want to show this this tweet. This is the one on the left, Hamad Al-Sawmi, 21, a Kuwaiti who was part of a rape gang made up of foreigners in Newcastle. He was found guilty of 3 counts sexual assault and 1 assault by penetration of a 12-year-old. So raping children, raping young girls. His punishment, 180 hours of community service and no jail. His lawyer said he was immature and led astray. And then on the right, you've got Sam Mellor. So it was lucky that Hamad didn't put up stickers, because if he put up stickers, wow, he would be away for 2 years. Just when you compare, this is the state of our legal system. And again, not one single Tory MP highlighting this absolute injustice. if I was an MP, I would want to raise this issue and ask for this case of Hamoud to be looked at again and ask whether it was illegal to put up stickers in Britain.
I mean, why is it always a Hamoud? That's my first question. It's always the same kinds of people that get busted, that these comparisons get made about. I mean, I have to be honest with you, this sticker scenario, I find it really eyebrow raising in the extreme, because how do you get put away for saying that the white population will be replaced by a certain period in the future? I think he said 2066 was the time in which that white people would be a minority in the UK. I mean, if you look at the numbers, it's possible. If you look at the way that certain groups breed and raise their families, it's possible that you could have that happen. I don't see why that's an arrestable offence. I don't see why saying that white people have nothing to apologise for is an offence. I mean, if someone said to me today, apologise, well, what for? Well, you know, for all those things that those people that may or may not have looked like you from a few hundred years ago, they did some horrible things. Okay, so what the fuck's that got to do with me? Well, you're white. Okay, apologise. No. Arrested. That's the outcome. You know, yeah. I don't understand why this is a thing. But when you have lads, men, 21 years old, I call him a lad, but he's still a man at the end of the day, going around and having sex with a child, raping a child. Community yeah. service. I mean, I'm lost for words because I don't really know how to express myself in a polite way, but I can't put my finger on it, Peter. I just don't understand how. Because let's put it this way: if a white man, to bring it back to the white man again, if a white man did it, he's going to jail.
Yep.
He's going to jail. He's gone. And people will be clapping him going into that jail. Yes, good. Get rid of him. Excellent. I hope we never see him again. But this guy gets a high-vis jacket with community service on the back, gets to pick up litter. Fuck off.
Well, this is the importance of social media, because I know the account End Wokeness put it up and it has around 3 million on Sam Miller's case. And I think that, what's Dan from Brokenomics? Lotus Eaters, I've forgotten his surname. He posted up about it and Elon Musk reposted to say, what? ? And again, it is that power of online communication, social media, I think it's going to force the government to actually look at this. And I cannot see putting stickers up of Sam actually staying in prison any part of that sentence. There's just, it's no way it can happen with the amount, with the spotlight which is on the case. But we'll see.
The online space is interesting to put pressure on politicians, but that's assuming they read their social media. I don't think they do. I don't think they go on there. I think that some MPs may, but I think a lot of them have got a team behind them that will post for them, and they'll never be told about the negative comments. They'll never be told about the feeling in the country. It'll just be, yes, Prime Minister, you're doing a great job. But if you read the comments, no, he's not.
Well, they are protected from that criticism, and I'm sure Rishi Sunak, as he flies around his private helicopter, doesn't really meet many normal people that will tell him what life is like, because he can just fly over those Gaza protests. So lucky for some of us. Let's the budget, which I had zero in. I remember the days I used to love sitting watching the budget. I remember the days I used to sit and watch Prime Minister's Question Time. That seems to be a whole lifetime ago, but this here is part of the budget, and Jeremy Hunt announces 1 million war memorial for a single faith, for Muslims who died in the two world wars, in his budget. The Chancellor said it would honour those Muslims lost in service of freedom and democracy. And I think this was the first thing he said in his budget. So we are all struggling, trying to make ends meet. And the most important thing that the British government can do is spend 1 million on a memorial for a single faith group. And I've seen this mocked. I saw Loza put up a picture of the cenotaph saying This is diversity. This is for everyone, whatever color, whatever creed, whatever background. And this does seem to just be more divide and conquer. But what were your thoughts whenever you saw this announced?
Well, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing, and it's embarrassing because of the timing of it. The only reason they've done this is to try and claw back Muslim votes ahead of a general election, because they know that the Tories don't have a good standing with Muslims, and they fear they're going to lose to... I mean, look, Labour are going to win regardless of what the Tories do. The Tories could have given everybody £1 million each in the budget and they'd have still lost. So it makes no difference what they do. The memorial to Muslims... Look, I've got no issue with that, actually, in principle. But the timing of it stinks. They shouldn't be announcing that at this point. They're only doing it for, you know, like you said, divide and conquer. It's a bit of political clickbait for those of us who are really interested in these kind of things. If you're sad like us, then you are. But of course, the timing of it is the thing that is staggering to me. Why now? It's ridiculous.
100%. You mentioned the Labour government we're going to get probably by the end of the year, and it's from the frying pan into the fire, although I don't know how much worse it will be. But this was a tweet from Angela Eagle. I think she's still an MP. And she put what Labour will do: legislate for trans-inclusive conversion therapy ban, make anti-LGBT plus hate crime an aggravated offence, the gender recognition process, and an international LGBT envoy. Let me just play the 45-second clip.
So this year, whether the Prime Minister likes it or not, there'll be a general election, and Labour will offer the country to pick up legislating to protect the LGBT community with a comprehensive trans-inclusive ban on conversion therapy. I would have liked to get it done sooner. It will happen. We just have to make progress, and it's very sad that, as Honourable Friend said, it's taken longer than the Brexit negotiations, which makes you stop and think about what's been going on. We'll also strengthen the law so anti-LGBT plus hate crimes are treated as aggravated offences, which is and there'll be a much needed modernising of gender recognition processes, which are humiliating and overlong.
Well, what good news, isn't it? This is just what we've been waiting for, Charlie.
I mean, of course, the LGBT agenda's taken longer to get through the door than the Brexit one, God forbid. That should have been done yesterday, obviously. I mean, this is the downside to the inevitable of Labour winning, is that you know this is going to be the first thing they do. They are going to bring in all this LGBT bollocks, some of whom identify as having some or none. But, you know, I don't get it. Like, why do you need to put into law accepting delusion? I've never understood this whole debate, and it's so infuriating, but also so boring at the same time, because everybody knows the answer to the question. I cannot say that I'm Charlotte, despite the fact that the police will come to my house if I do, right? I cannot say that, you know, I'm a black man. I cannot say that I am, I don't know, let's go something more extreme, that I'm physically disabled. I cannot say these things because they are not true. Why do you need politicians like this? I don't understand. And Labour will win on that ticket. And it's going to be the uni graduates that come out from some bullshit place like Bristol that are going to vote Labour en masse to get this over the line. The last thing I want is this country being controlled by people with blue hair and ball rings through their nose and tattoos up their arm with six kids by six different dads. No thanks.
Oh, it's coming. Oh, it's coming, Charlie. let's finish off on something very different from all the war and posse, all our US viewers. Yes, yes, there was a big event this week. So let's bring that up just to finish. And it was this. Babylon Bee, well, there are two. There's the Supreme Court ruling, and then we'll just finish on the primary results from Super Tuesday. But Babylon Bee just nailed it. Their headlines: in major blow to democracy, Supreme Court rules voters can vote for favorite candidate. And this was the ruling that Trump can remain on the ballot. And it was a 9-0. It's probably difficult to get a group of judges, a group of anyone, to agree completely, but they threw it out. Whether it was judges appointed on the left or on the right, Republican or Democrat, they all agreed that actually you can't remove the favorite candidate. It would be banana republic, but I guess that's where. But yes, it was. I just loved it. It was a beautiful headline, and the Babylon Bee just got it so right.
Yeah, no, they're always good for their headlines. I've never seen anything they've produced which I didn't laugh at, which is great. A great credit to them. I mean, look, this is great for America. They get to vote for their favorite president. They get to vote for the eventual winner of their election as well, which would be Donald Trump. With any luck, let's hope this one doesn't get. Oh, how do I put this without getting myself in trouble?
Oh, we're not on YouTube. Let's hope it doesn't get stolen.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't get stolen. Again. I mean, if Dippy Joe wins again, I mean, my God, we're in trouble. We're in trouble if he wins again. How long that will last before the wheels come off, I've got no idea. But if we get Trump back, great. And no judge anywhere should be saying that a candidate should be taken off of the ballot. You know, let's have it right. Trump hasn't been convicted of anything. And from what I've read, they're saying that he's offended the Constitution in some way with the insurrection bullshit. And that's why he should be ineligible. But that is open to analysis, I would say. And obviously, people with a left bent will always say that he was guilty of that. And people like us who our common sense can see that isn't what happened. I mean, there's no way that is what happened, but let's hope he wins.
100%. Well, this, just give a line from this Babylon Bee. It says, "We've never seen democracy in such danger," said Black and Gay White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, who is Black and Gay. Today's ruling from the Supreme Court now adds credence to the belief held by fringe extremists that they are allowed to select the candidate they want in an election. This is terrifying. That is close to the bone, because that's the Democrats said, oh, you can pick anyone, but just not the ones we don't like. You have to pick our decrepit person who doesn't know what day of the week and you have to clean up his poop every morning. It is, man. And you watch the US networks just in tears at the how depressing. I mean, that was the best part, watching the lefties cry over this.
Well, come November, they're going to cry some more.
They will. Let me bring up, because obviously you had the 15 states voting for who will stand, and this is obviously pre the election. This is just the primaries, which in effect have now finished. And this is the, let me bring up just as a final screen, the, no, that's not going to bring up. Give me a second. Let me bring up the final one, which shows how well Trump did, and then poor Nikki Haley had to drop out because there was no way she could actually, probably no way she could raise any more money. And it is this beautiful screen. And up in the top right, Vermont, I think, Nikki Haley just about won. I think she'd won in D.C. as well. And all the rest is Trump. And I'm what, I mean, Charlie, when you look at, obviously it is now between the two of them, Trump and Biden. And although they're both very similar age, and age is one thing that's mentioned, one is actually completely able, and I watched him speak twice when I was over in the States and on fire. I don't think Biden could actually stand up and speak for an hour and a half, never mind string a few sentences together for a press conference. And it is embarrassing that Americans want those never Trumpers. They want to desperately hold on to decrepit Biden just because they hate Trump so much.
Well, that's bad for them, because why would you want to vote for somebody who doesn't know what day of the week is, like you've just said? If anything, if they were true Democrats, they would ask for his removal for a better candidate. They should really be voting for someone more credible. And I'm not suggesting they just parachute in Kamala Harris, because I think despite her having a few more marbles, she's also still off her nut. Like, yeah. I don't understand anything. I mean, she repeats the same lines in every speech. There's a video that's gone around of her just saying the same old, I forget what it is, but even when I've heard it a few times now, and I think, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense what you're saying, and she's the vice. So hopefully, I mean, I say hopefully from purely from a democratic perspective, because I do still want Trump to win, but hopefully they would, you know, import another candidate that has a little bit more sensibility, has a little bit more corpus mentis upstairs, you know, and was able to actually, like you said, string a speech together. I mean, I do enjoy watching Biden, though. He is funny, but not for the right reasons.
He is funny for those outtakes, but I do, and I am down the rabbit hole. I do worry that they will try and stick Michelle Obama in, who, because of her name recognition, I think it would be a challenger for Trump where Biden isn't. That's my concern. So I want Biden to stay where he is, because no way they can vote for him.
And she could possibly be the first trans president.
She could be. She could be. Talking about people having bollocks. But anyway, great. We'll not even go there. No. Charlie, always so good having you on. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. Let me just share one. Actually, there is one. Give people a smile as they leave. And it is, and I was, I had slagged off Bob Moran, I think a while ago. But actually, credit where credit is due. And that is his post International Women's Day,
which is today.
That is so good. Women being airbrushed out of society, out of view. And women, is this what you fought for? The right to actually disappear?
He doesn't miss, does he? He never misses. Everything he's done, I think he's so on the money. On the money. And the artist on the right of that picture there is the typical Labour voter. So
It is. Someone who's confused. And really needs to talk through their issues. But of course, that's now illegal. Charlie, thanks so much for coming on Charity Views. Always good to have you. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. Donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.